This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly, as I always say, this program is also vital for all people. We, with the European American Unity and Rights Organization, believe in the preservation of our heritage, our individual freedom, our culture, our way of life in our respective nations. But we also respect that for all people of the world. And we see the biggest danger to peace and the biggest danger to individual national freedom and self-determination to be the power of Jewish supremacism and Jewish extremism, which is the source of such terrible conflict in the Middle East and certainly the terrible catastrophe, the human rights violations, the massacres that are occurring right now in the nation of Lebanon. Massacres that are being aided and abetted by the United States. But I don't think it's the will of the American people. I think it's because Jewish supremacists and extremists have truly captured the American political process, not by doing it openly, but by doing it behind the scenes, controlling campaign financing, controlling so much of the media, and infiltrating the parties and making it absolutely necessary to support Israel for an individual to survive. We're not getting the true message of American interests in the Middle East, and we're hurting America every day by our current policies. The current chapter of my book, I'm doing a free version of Jewish Supremacism, Chapter 6, Jewish Political Supremacy. And this is the third part of this sixth chapter. I think you'll find it very interesting. Last time I left you hanging, waiting for a quote from Dr. Steven Steinlight, who was once head of the National Affairs of the American Jewish Committee, the most powerful Jewish organization in the United States, where he admits freely in an article to his fellow Jews the absolute Jewish extremism and supremacism that is prevalent in the Jewish community. It's an amazing quote, and I think you'll find the rest of this chapter to be quite startling and actually quite frightening, because their power is indeed breathtaking. But it's a power you must understand if you're going to understand American foreign policy, American political policy, in many different areas of our national life. And of course, it affects the world in a very powerful way as well. Okay, this is Chapter 6, the third part of Jewish Political Supremacy, from my book, Jewish Supremacism. He even confesses the rampant Jewish supremacism of which most Gentiles are completely unaware. And I've made this quote many times, but it's so important. I hope that you listen very closely to every word here. Quote, I confess it, at least like thousands of other typical Jewish kids in my generation, I was reared as a Jewish nationalist, even a quasi-separatist. Every summer for 2 months for 10 formative years during my childhood and adolescence, I attended Jewish summer camp. There each morning I saluted a foreign flag, dressed in a uniform reflecting its colors, sang a foreign national anthem, learned a foreign language, learned foreign folk songs and dances, and was taught that Israel was the true homeland. Immigration to Israel was considered of the highest virtue, and like many other Jewish teens of my generation, I spent 2 summers working in Israel on a collective farm while I contemplated that possibility. More tacitly and subconsciously, I was taught the superiority of my people to the Gentiles who had oppressed us. We were taught to view non-Jews as untrustworthy outsiders, people from whom sudden gusts of hatred might be anticipated, people less sensitive, intelligent, and moral than ourselves. We were also taught that the lesson of our dark history is that we could rely on no one. Of course, we also saluted the American and Canadian flags and sang those anthems, usually with real feeling, but it was clear where our primary loyalty was meant to reside. Now, that's unquote. And if any Gentile Baird to say, the typical Jewish kids are taught that their real loyalty is to Israel rather than America, and the Jews teach their children that they're superior to Gentiles in intelligence and morals, he would be condemned and hounded out of politics as a, quote, anti-Semite. Yet these are the precise words used by the head of the Domestic Policy Division of the American Jewish Committee. And his words were not some offhanded or careless conversation where he didn't mean to say or he said something different than what he meant. These were his carefully chosen words from a major article he wrote for Jewish consumption. Steinlight even speaks frankly about one of the traditional methods of Jewish power, divide and conquer. And I want you to note that the wording is similar to many other Jewish writers. They write as if they were at war with the Gentile world. And perhaps they are. Quote, for perhaps another generation, an optimistic forecast, the Jewish community is thus in a position where it will be able to divide and conquer and enter into selective coalitions that support our agenda. Unquote. I guess I'm supposed to be an anti-Semite because I'm one American citizen who prefers that our nation not be divided and conquered. Jewish political tactics similar to those used on the local and national level are employed in the international arena as well. Jews in critical positions in the U.S. government can use their influence to blackmail other nations of the world to support Israel. Foreign aid, trade status, and other U.S. policies are used like a carrot and a stick to coerce other nations to support Israel's position in the United Nations. Zionist influence is also used to buy off with huge expenditures of American taxpayers' money as foreign aid Israel's enemies, such as Egypt and Jordan. Jewish power in government and media has also prodded U.S. military actions against Israel's more implacable enemies, such as Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi. America, with her great might, has become a surrogate, strong-armed enforcer for Israel and the Jewish people worldwide. The tail truly wags the dog. And as a side note here, I want you to note that one of the most radical, virulent Jewish supremacists in the world, the man who orchestrated the Iraq War as much as anyone, Paul Wolfowitz, radical Jewish supremacist, he was put ahead of the World Bank, a person that controls countless billions of dollars of funds. Everyone around the world, every country knows his positions on Israel, and they know that if they don't please Mr. Wolfowitz, or if they have a position on Israel that Mr. Wolfowitz wouldn't like, they're not likely to get those billions of dollars or aid or loans. And you can imagine how that would affect their votes and their reactions to certain Israeli interests in the United Nations and elsewhere. Next section is the anti-American war against Iraq. President Bush proved to be completely under Jewish power when he dutifully went to war against Iraq on behalf of Israel. A war clearly against every true interest of the United States. When America, under its Zionist controllers, went to war against Iraq in March of 2003, the world was told that war was necessary because Iraq violated United Nations resolutions. In fact, Israel had violated far more resolutions, almost 10 times more, than had Iraq. Bush launched a war against Iraq supposedly because it had weapons of mass destruction. This while Israel had one of the largest arsenals of deadly chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons in the world. America went to war against a nation that never raised a finger against the United States. While it sent more billions and more weapons of mass destruction to Israel, a nation that undeniably had committed murderous terrorism and damaging espionage against the United States. And as I've said earlier as a side note, recently, since this book was published, Israel's even had ceremonies recognizing and calling heroes Jewish terrorists who terroristically firebombed American installations in Egypt trying to get us into war with that country. And Israel's had ceremonies celebrating the terrorist actions against the British when the bombing of the King David Hotel, kind of a mini 9/11, and they were celebrated. And at least Britain offered some complaints and some protests about that celebration, but our government didn't offer a word of protest about Israel, the country we send billions to, celebrating terrorist acts against an ally, a treacherous act trying to get us into a war which would have betrayed American interests in every way. Only Jewish domination of the American media and government enabled such obvious hypocrisy in the Iraq War. There probably has never been a war more clearly against the interests of the United States than the Iraq War of 2003. It has made hundreds of millions of people around the world hate us. It's put our brave military men in harm's way, made Americans more likely to suffer from future terrorism, and it's come at a huge, financially devastating cost of hundreds of billions of dollars, and which, by the way, will be trillions of dollars over the next few years. Of course, Jewish power can be used for many self-serving reasons. In Switzerland's battle with Edgar Bronfman's World Jewish Congress, Zionists in the United States used our government to successfully blackmail the Swiss into capitulating to Bronfman's extortion of $1.2 billion by threatening to have the United States government shut down Swiss banking in the United States. Jews even used city governments in the blackmail effort. New York City, as a center of banking, can severely punish the Swiss for failing to accede to Jewish demands. To quote the Times-Picayune of August 13, 1998, quote, "A number of cities and states in the United States have threatened to impose sanctions on UBS, AG, and the Credit Suisse Group if they did not agree to an acceptable settlement." When I began my previous chapter on the Jewish domination of American media, I asked, what if the Iraqis, who supported Saddam Hussein, controlled the American media? Americans would correctly see the situation as dangerous to our freedoms and our national interests. Suppose for a moment that the same Iraqis that were loyal to Saddam had the most powerful lobby in Washington, were the top national security advisors of the president, and practically controlled the economic policies of the United States. No true American patriot, aware of the alien domination, would tolerate it. Is the situation any less tolerable that these men and women are not Iraqis but fanatical Zionists loyal to Ariel Sharon, reared in a catechism of anti-Gentile Jewish supremacy and completely dedicated to the most racist nation on earth? Few in America seem to ask these important questions. The silence is understandable, however, when one identifies the tribe who decides what questions are to be posed and what facts are to be given to the American people. It is also understandable considering the real-life examples of the political consequences of telling the truth about Jewish supremacism and power. Men such as Senator William Fulbright, Senator Charles Percy, Representative Paul Finley, Pat Buchanan, and I have paid a high price for frankness and honesty on this issue. Congressman Finley wrote an excellent book detailing the incredible intimidation and suppression exercised against those who stood up against the Israeli lobby. The book is called They Dare to Speak Out. Perhaps the Jews have every right to try to influence the American government and its policies. But we, the great majority of the American people, have the right to demand that our government be ours and not theirs. The right of self-government is basic to all political freedom. A government manipulated against the best interests of its people on behalf of a tiny minority is called tyranny. When some of my friends in the patriotic movement coined the aforementioned term Zionist Occupation Government, or ZOG, I thought the term a bit extreme. But after much reading and thought, I realized that it was a rather apt description of the sad state of affairs in Washington, D.C. The quotation from the Israeli Mariv newspaper should send a shiver up the spine of every loyal American. I will quote it for the third time, and I will do so again and again in my political life until the American people understand its gravity. Quote, "The U.S. has no longer a government of Gentiles, but an administration in which Jews are full partners in the decision-making at all levels. Perhaps the aspects of the Jewish religious law connected with the term government of Goyim should be reexamined, since it's an outdated term in the United States." Unquote. So America no longer has a government of Goyim, a government of us. And the only ones who make a point of saying it publicly are Zionists boasting for the edification of their fellow Jews in Israel. It is my belief that there are still millions of Americans who, if they have the opportunity to read these lines, will become as angry as the character of Howard Beale in the movie Network. They will become mad as hell, and they will do whatever it takes to change things so the next generation of Americans will not have to take it anymore. The human instinct to protect one's family, race, and nation is called patriotism. It beseeches us to oppose any alien group seeking the control of our nation's government, whether it be Zionists, Iraqis, Germans, or even theoretically the fanciful notion of invaders from outer space. Such impulses are not anti-Semitism, but simply good patriotism. We have every right to stand up for ourselves, just as Jews stand up for themselves. Stephen Steinlight, the AJC director, who I've quoted extensively, put it in elemental terms. He wrote, quote, "We rightly ask, if I am not for myself, who will be for me?" In America and the Western world, only Jews are allowed to exhibit true patriotism. For those of us whose patriotism dares to go beyond enjoying the fireworks of the 4th of July, we're attacked relentlessly. Jews who seek to exert control over other nations are never condemned, but we Gentiles who simply express the natural desire to have our own nations reflect our own traditions, values, and interests are branded as anti-Semitic, racist, supremacist, and hateful. Such hypocrisy has always been the essence of their strategy and a weapon used in the exercise of their power. Another weapon has been their ability to control language, and it's time we probe into the real reasons for the misused word in the modern world, the word anti-Semitism. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That is the end of the final part of Jewish Political Supremacy from my book, Jewish Supremacism. And, of course, I think you're seeing the reality of this chapter being evidenced every day in American policy in the Middle East, where the American policy totally under the control of Israel is saying, go ahead, Israel, continue the slaughter, the killing. And it's a terrible scenario, but it's going on in Lebanon, and it's every day it does go on, it hurts the true interests of the American people, and it's a terrible crime against those people. The next chapter coming up is called The Roots of Anti-Semitism, Economic Exploitation. And I think you're going to find this chapter extremely interesting, and you will start to get an understanding of the term anti-Semitism, what it really means, and how they have framed the entire argument about Jewish power and Jewish extremism in a way that benefits them and really is a terrible slander and almost a blood libel upon us. Look forward to seeing you again on Monday. Until then, please take the time and effort to spread this book around. This book is free. It's going out, and we're over halfway now in the book, and we're making a lot of progress. Let your friends and neighbors know about it. And listen, if you enjoy this, if you like what we're doing, and if you want to support my work, I'm traveling the world. I'm doing lectures most times. I'm not paid a penny for any lectures. I'm not given any travel money. I do this. I spend huge amounts of time reading, researching, writing, speaking, lecturing all over the world, trying to educate our people about what's happening. And I can't do this without your help. I have no big financial backers. Maybe somebody out there listening to this broadcast is very well healed financially, is a millionaire, or maybe somebody will come through like an angel and help support this work. But until that happens, and I'm not holding my breath, I depend completely on those people that send that $10 and $20 and $50 and $100 and $500, or $1,000 sometimes, for some people who are really unselfish, to make this work go on. You can go to my website, davidduke.com, to make a contribution. You can mail it directly, Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70four 1-888-888-7870. That's 188 box 188 Mandeville, Louisiana 70470. Just send it to David Duke, and I appreciate very much your support. And please, while you're sitting at your computer, send this information to your friends and family, and let's work together to change the world. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukedave.com.